WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Families have been at the center of writer Robert Boswell's fiction. His stories have been about the complexities and nuances of family life. Crooked Hearts, written in 1987, is about a family torn apart by internal conflicts. The book established Boswell as an important new writer. New York Times critic Michiko Kakutani called it a dazzling debut. His new novel, Mystery Ride, follows the lives of Angela and Stephen Landis through their 6-year marriage, their divorce and new relationships, and explores the ties, including their daughter Dulcie, that keep them attached. Robert Boswell lives in New Mexico, where he teaches at New Mexico State University. He told me that the idea for this book came to him when he heard these words from a Bruce Springsteen song.
Would they ever look so happy again, the handsome groom and his bride, as they stepped into that long black limousine for their mystery ride?
Now, what was it about those lines that struck you?
Well, I had been working on the novel for about 3 years, and I was in my truck driving to Arizona from New Mexico and listening to the tape that I'd heard many times, and it struck me when I heard that particular passage of the song that my characters were on a mystery ride. And while this song was talking about a wedding, and my characters were now divorced, that while their marriage had ended, they were still on the mystery ride, that they were still in some way committed to each other in a very deep and profound way.
Well, what you really seem to be saying throughout this book, and as you write about the characters and things happen to them, is that married people really can't get divorced entirely. They can't entirely get divorced from each other.
Well, this couple certainly can't. And I think that's what I want to explore. It seems to me that there are a lot of couples like that.
Ones that you've observed, friends who have gotten divorced but can't get separated from each other?
Well, this particular couple, it seems to me, found, well, true love, found real deep, profound love. And that part of that love had to do with their sense of personal integrity. They found, each found a double in the other. But I also feel it's that personal integrity, that desire to be true to some part of themselves, that ultimately pushes them apart because they each have to find some way to be true to that. So it seemed to me that what brought them together and what pushed them apart was the same thing.
Let me get you to read a section from the book, and this is rather early on, in which Angela's really describing, she's thinking about the marriage that she had to Stephen, and this kind of summarizes it.
They had stayed married only 6 years, but Stephen was the father of her daughter and the first man she had ever loved. There were moments when she longed for him. She had been 22 when she married him. They had known each other since she was a senior in high school, and their courtship had had the slowness of care. She had been dating Andrew, Stephen's younger brother, and although she had slept with Andrew on their second date, she did not sleep with Stephen for nearly 2 years, the weight, a delirious power that surged through them both. They married and were unreasonably happy for a time, then they were no longer happy and they divorced. Even now, Angela cannot say what had happened. She had seen a strength of character in Stephen that had been absent in other boys. For that matter, she had never seen that sort of strength in anyone else. She had known he would never leave her, would always love her, but she found she could not stay with him. He was a strong and serious man, but what good was it doing him? He had decided, randomly as far as she could tell, to become a farmer and to remain a farmer. That decision pointed the marriage toward failure. Life became restricted to the possibilities of a few cultivated acres of land, while the rest of the world slipped with increasing quickness beyond Angela's grasp.
Those couple of paragraphs really sum up the history of this marriage. And what you seem to be saying is that couples and individuals within a couple make a decision that has a kind of unintended or unanticipated effect on the other person. And that, at least in this marriage, there wasn't something horrible and huge that happened that drove them apart. It was a series of decisions made along the way, which in the end ended the marriage.
Yes, I think that novels very often focus on problems that explosive sorts of problems, and marriages break up because there is an affair or there's some dramatic moment that pushes people apart. And it seems to me that very often marriages break up because some unwritten agreement, some unspoken agreement even changes. And one person may feel that the agreement still should be honored, while the other person is living under the assumption that they've gone past that, that they've gone beyond that. And I think that's very often the reason why marriages fail.
Do you think most couples have a kind of wordless contract? There's the out loud contract, and then there's the one that no one talks about.
Yeah, the one no one talks about is the one that really matters. All those unspoken agreements. I mean, everyone has some sense, some vision of how they want to spend his or her life. And when you get married, you have some sense of how you want to spend your lives together. And early on, there's an assumption that you see the world in the same way. But as you stay together, your vision not only changes, sometimes it's just a matter of your vision becomes clarified. And it's very rare, I think, that two people can continue to share the same vision for an extended period of time.
Well, I got the impression in reading your book that what you're saying about, certainly about this marriage and perhaps marriages in general, is that you really can't understand them as you live them. You can't understand them entirely as they're going on. They only make sense when you look back at them.
Yeah, I think you're lucky if they make sense then.
Or maybe they make more sense.
Yeah, they make more sense. I think that's true of most things. We don't really know what we're up to while we're in the middle of it. And we can't see any design until we can look back on it. I think, in fact, that's part of why people love novels, is that it gives you a perspective on life, that you can see these characters' lives and see how there's a certain sense and a certain order to their lives, and it at least suggests that perhaps there's also a certain sense in order to your own life.
Well, I want to talk some more, but first we have to take a very short break, and my guest on Fresh Air is Robert Boswell. He's a novelist, and his newest novel is called Mystery Ride. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with writer Robert Boswell. Your father was a public school principal, is that right?
He was a principal of the elementary school in Wycliffe when we lived in Kentucky. And then when we moved to Arizona, he was a school teacher, first in a junior high and then in high school.
Was he ever your teacher or your principal?
He was my principal when I was first through fourth grade, the first half of fourth grade. But he was never my teacher by design. That is, he didn't want me in class, and I thought it would be sort of weird, too, so we avoided each other.
Well, when you passed your father in the hall, did you say, "Hi, Dad," or "Hi, Mr. Boswell"?
I said, "Hi, Dad," if I acknowledged him. Sort of a lousy kid, sort of a difficult kid in high school.
How do you mean that?
Well, I was in trouble a lot, and I was defiant, and while I was still very close to my family. I didn't always want to let anyone else know that because I guess I thought that wasn't cool.
Well, so were you kind of like the minister's son, if you know what I mean? Which is the minister's son is the wildest kid in town.
Well, I tried to play both sides against the middle. That is, I was on student council and things like that in high school because I knew that that would play well with my father and his friends, all of whom taught at the high school. But then I had this other life where I was pretty rowdy and, of course, I couldn't keep one life separate from the other and wound up getting into some trouble. But it seemed to me that's often the way I've lived, sort of tried to have these two lives. And at some point as an adult, I tried to determine which one was closest to who I really am and to pursue that one.
So do you still get in trouble as an adult?
Not so much, no.
You're better at getting away with it or better at choosing one life over the other?
Better at choosing one life over the other. I think what rebellion I have now exists more in my work and exploring rebellion in my work. I mean, Dulcie, the 15-year-old girl in this novel, is based a lot on my memory of what it was like to be 15, and I pursue that anger and the sort of, you know, how when you're 15, there's a certain kind of buzz that you have. It's internal, and you feel you have to be true to it all the time. And if you aren't true to it, somehow you're selling out. And I wanted to explore that with this character, and I think my wildness is expressed through her.
Let me just switch gears here in the couple of minutes that we have left. You did work as a therapist for a while, as a rehab counselor before becoming a writer. Does that explain part of your interest in family life? And was being a counselor a way to understand families, just the way writing is a way to understand families?
Yeah, my interest in psychology and in counseling, I think, stems from the same source as my interest in literature. I found that literature for me was a much more rewarding way to explore human behavior than psychology. I resist, really, psychology more and more, because it seems to me that that any kind of ideology, adherence to any kind of ideology, places real limitations on your ability to understand humans and understand the world. It seems to me that ideology is the light that creates the darkness, that it may shine a very specific light on a very specific instance, but then everything around it is dark, and I'm less and less a believer in psychology.
But did psychology help you love your characters as you seem to do, and you don't judge your characters, or they don't come off as if the writer who wrote them is judging them?
Well, I think I owe that more to reading Chekhov or reading Alice Munro or reading great literature, wherein people sometimes are doing terrible things. And Chekhov, for example, never judges them, never suggests that we should feel superior to them. So my allegiance is with literature. It really dawned on me when I was an undergraduate, and I have a split major in creative writing and psychology, and I had been studying Freud in a class, and then in a lit class, I was reading Melville, and it seemed to me that Melville made a much more profound examination of the human experience than Freud, and I thought, time to jump ship.
And how easy was it to jump ship? It's not like you just become a writer the next day once you give up being a rehab counselor.
Well, it was hard. I had a place on the beach in San Diego, and I remember telling, and I was paid pretty well, and I remember telling my father that I was going to quit and go back to graduate school to study writing, that I wanted to be a writer. And he said, well, if that's what you want to do, you should pursue it. And then he said, but you're going to miss that money. And then...
Have you?
Well, no, I never did. I never did. I was broke for a while, for a pretty long while, but I knew pretty quickly that I had to give myself a chance to be a writer.
Robert Boswell's newest novel is called Mystery Ride. This is Fresh Air.